Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
Now, from our nation's capital, this is Bloomberg Sound On.
Georgia is better than Herschel Walker.
But they don't know I was built for this. Yeah, I was built for this one.
Apparently, he also claimed that he used to let me beat him at basketball. But then he admitted that we've never actually met.
Bloomberg Sound On. Politics, policy, and perspective from D.C.'s top name.
These wage increases are larger than the increase in inflation.
The issue of sick time needs to be, the companies need to sit down with the unions now.
Bloomberg Sound On with Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Radio.
It's the last weekend of campaigning in Georgia, and the Senate race is still too close to call. Welcome to the fastest hour in politics as we head for Tuesday's runoff with fresh polling out. And after another visit by former President Barack Obama, we're joined by the most important political journalist in Georgia, Greg Bluestein of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, for the lay of the land. President Biden signs legislation to prevent the rail strike. We'll consider the Political Balancing Act with Lincoln Mitchell, political analyst from Columbia University. And as Biden rewrites the calendar for the presidential campaign cycle, New Hampshire says, don't even try it. We'll have analysis from our signature panel, Bloomberg Politics contributors Rick Davis and Jeannie Shanzano, here for the hour on this Friday edition. New polling ahead this weekend of campaigning in Georgia, this last weekend, I should say. The Senate runoff, again, is on Tuesday. And a new CNN SSRS poll out today shows Raphael Warnock leading by 4 percentage points among likely voters. Came out 52-48%. It's about the same as the Real Clear average of polls we've been looking at. Although Warnock leads, as we've heard in other polls like AARP, by a wider margin among independents, 61% to 36 there. The poll's got a margin of error about 3 points. So this is still tight. Senator Warnock was on the stump before about 2,000 people last night in Atlanta. Here he is.
I believe in my soul that Georgia knows that Georgia is better than Herschel Walker. Come on. Georgia is better than Herschel Walker.
And with another presidential visit, that's why we had 2,000 people there. Not Joe Biden, but Barack Obama back in Georgia went after some of Herschel Walker's more interesting remarks.
Since the last time I was here, Mr. Walker has been talking about issues that are of great importance to the people of Georgia. Like whether it's better to be a vampire or a werewolf. This is a debate that I must confess I once had myself. When I was 7.
Remember Fright Night, anyone? The vampires and werewolves? This is Herschel Walker on November 16th.
The other night I was watching this movie. I was watching this movie called Fright Night, Freak Night, or some kind of night. But it was about vampires. I don't know if you know vampires are cool people, are they not? But I'm going to tell you something that I found out. A werewolf can kill a vampire. Did you know that? I never knew that, so I didn't want to be a vampire anymore. I wanted to be a werewolf. But then anyway.
Of course, you heard that if you listen to this broadcast. We're lucky to have The View from Atlanta today. As we're joined by Greg Bluestein, who's been in the center of this for months. First the general, now the runoff. He's the senior political reporter at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Greg, thank you for being here. How much of a difference does Barack Obama make for Raphael Warnock?
I think he makes a big difference because right now, what does Raphael Warnock want to do? He wants to energize the base in an election that, you know, still a lot of Georgians have no idea is going on.
Wow.
He wants to energize the base of Democratic supporters, especially black voters who are the backbone of the Democratic Party here in Georgia.
Mm-hmm. And by contrast, knowing Raphael Warnock, he had a lot more money than Herschel Walker. He's going into this final stretch with three times as much cash. How much of a difference has Brian Kemp made, the governor, for the Walker campaign?
So on the flip side, I just talked about energizing the base. But look, both candidates also want to win those split-ticket voters. 200,000 more voters in November voted for Governor Brian Kemp than for Herschel Walker. That was the difference in this runoff. And so right now, Herschel Walker is trying to use Governor Kemp to win back those voters to his camp, or at least have them stay home and not vote for Senator Warnock. Meanwhile, Senator Warnock is doing his best to keep those guys in his camp, including having even Dave Matthews Band, who appeals to white suburban middle-aged voters. He had them come. He had Dave Matthews come just a few days ago, and there was a joke going around that basically every babysitter in the suburbs was occupied that night as tons of voters came to see Dave Matthews and Senator Warnock.
So bringing out the firepower, the celebrity firepower here. How about, you know, Brian Kemp was a little late to the game. It was weird during the general because he had the Trump thing. And, you know, I don't know if Herschel Walker could have won that with Brian Kemp's help then. Is it too late now?
Yeah, it's a good question because there were strained ties between those two men throughout the general election. Right. I asked Herschel Walker in the May primary if he voted for Brian Kemp or his challenger, David Perdue. Herschel wouldn't say either way. He didn't want to antagonize Trump, who, of course, opposed Brian Kemp. But the two had nothing to do with each other. It wasn't just Kemp who didn't want to do anything with Walker. Walker didn't want much to do with Kemp either. Huh. Now Kemp could be this pivotal difference maker, and he's helping. But he's also, you know, he hasn't put his entire being into this race. He's not on the campaign trail with Herschel Walker right now. Instead, he's helping in other ways. He's cutting ads. He's holding fundraisers, and he went to one rally.
Yeah, the big rally last weekend. A lot's been made of the early vote here. I understand now it's almost 1.5 million people casting ballots early, Greg. Is that advantage Warnock because of the sort of traditional relationship the Democrats have with early voting, or is it different now in Georgia?
Yeah, it's impossible to tell for sure, but here's what we know. We know that most of those early votes are taking place in counties that Democrats won. Yep. And we also know that the demographics definitely favor Democrats. With black voters significantly disproportionate. They have more black voters are voting early than it represents the state's population writ large. That's a good sign for Democrats. We also know Republicans tend to dominate on election day. So, you know, Herschel Walker beat Raphael Warnock on election day by about 15 points. So they still have that in their back pocket. But right now, Democrats might be building a cushion that's insurmountable for Herschel Walker. We'll see.
Fascinating. I mentioned this. We were listening to some of the big rally last night with Barack Obama. And I just wonder what it's like to be a reporter there on the ground, because from a national perspective, you know, when you get onto the news wires, the news feeds and the news programs, even Twitter, you see much more from the Warnock campaign. There's much more outreach to maybe traditional sources. I don't know if you can even call Twitter that. Herschel Walker's been speaking largely, from what it seems, to conservative media outlets, and they don't have the whole media apparatus to come to the event and plug in and get great sounding audio and good video. You see a lot of cell phone video and so forth, Greg. Is that the way it is to cover it locally?
Yes. There's a good reason for the difference, and that's because Herschel Walker has been ignoring the reporters who cover his campaign.
There you go.
For most of this campaign, he has not talked to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and we're no anomaly here. He hasn't talked to basically most of the media covering him. Instead, he favors mostly friendly outlets, Fox News, where he's asked mostly positive questions. And look, that's had a profound impact on the way we've covered him, because frankly, we can't even get him to comment on issues that might help him. You know, asking about stances that Joe Biden's taken that should be red meat for him. Right. Nor can we get him to comment on measures like just the other day with Donald Trump's meeting with a white supremacist racist. Yeah. Every major Republican in Georgia condemned that meeting, except for Herschel Walker.
You can't get an interview. And it's not even a written statement, never mind a sit-down interview. They're just not accessible. Yeah. Is there a press shop like you would have in a normal campaign?
There is, but right now, at this stage of the campaign, the queries are going unanswered. Now, you know, of course, we have back channels with people in the campaign, so we know what's going on, and we know when they're just not going to comment. I'm getting word like saying, hey, we're not going to say anything on this. You can ask, but we're not going to say anything.
You're not getting anything.
It's not a brick wall, but certainly it's very bizarre to be covering a campaign. I've been doing this for 20 years in Georgia, and even the candidates who don't like the AJC still talk with us. We still have a rapport with them. We still know what they're doing. And in this case, you know, going to Herschel Walker rally is just hearing the same stump speech and then him leaving without taking any questions. Not only that, They've recently started putting up barriers so that reporters can't even get within shouting distance of them, shout questions at them.
Wow. Well, look, that's the Ricky Bobby campaign, I guess, Greg.
He does call it that a lot.
So, you know, from someone looking from the outside in, Republicans won every other statewide race in November. What is it that makes this one so different? Is it the Trump effect or something altogether different?
Yeah, I don't think it's the Trump effect. Although Trump did help, you know, did help Herschel Walker, he probably would have run away with the nomination even without Donald Trump's support, owing to his celebrity, his high name recognition, and his legendary status as a football icon here in Georgia. I think it's two things. One is the unique, you know, quality of his candidacy because of all the blunders, the history of violent, erratic behavior, the missteps on the campaign trail, the lies, the exaggerations. All that has hurt him, particularly with independent voters. And then on the other hand, you've got to give it to Senator Warnock, who ran a very distant, different campaign than most Democrats ran. He kept his distance from Joe Biden.
Yep.
He talked about bipartisanship. He tried to make himself a safe harbor for those swing voters who he knew were skeptical of Herschel Walker. This was the strategy from the get-go. This wasn't a new turn. This was something he was doing a year ago.
Well, Greg, we're coming to find you next week in Atlanta. I can't wait to meet you in person. Greg Bluestein, Atlanta Journal-Constitution. You ready to do this all over again?
Are you ready to get this done one more time?
Yeah! One more time.
This is now the fifth time my name has been on the ballot in less than 2 years. For the same doggone job.
Georgians are headed to the polls for the second time in a month.
They told me I'm in a runoff, but they don't know I was built for this. Yeah, I was built for this one.
Let's try it one more once.
Yeah, and with the count, the great count at our backs, we move to Atlanta. We'll be there Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, day before, day of, day after, with special coverage here on the fastest hour in politics. We'll assemble the panel next. Rick Davis is back with us. Jeannie Shanzano, our signature panel, only here on Sound On. We'll check traffic and markets for you on the way, too. I'm Joe Matthew. This is Bloomberg.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Radio.
So while Senator Raphael Warnock was with Barack Obama and 2,000 supporters last night, Herschel Walker on Thursday, as I read on the terminal, was canvassing Republican enclaves along Georgia's western border. Played to a crowd of about 100 people, most of them white, in a sunny parking lot at the Piggly Wiggly in Columbus. Many had Trump hats. Many also sported the peach stickers, declaring they had already voted in the race. And we assemble our panel with just days to go before we vote again. Rick Davis is back today. Jeannie Shanzano here too. Bloomberg Politics contributors. Rick, you're an expert on campaigns. Describe to us the if we can even call it the infrastructure of the Herschel Walker campaign. After what we heard there from Greg, they're not even talking to reporters right now. They're not following the normal path in reaching out to media, providing infrastructure to cover big events, get video out there. They don't care.
You know, a lot of it is just the way he ran his general election, right? I mean, he was an anathema to reporters. They wanted to ask him hard questions about his relationships with these women who claimed he was helping to support their abortions and promoting abortions with them. And, he, you know, that was, if he's going to answer that question over and over and over, just quit taking questions from the press. I mean, I've seen
campaigns. Would it be different without the scandals, or was this just the nature of it to begin with?
You know, look, arguably the press is going to be biased toward an incumbent Democrat, you know, running for reelection. And Herschel Walker hasn't been press friendly, so he hasn't developed any relationships along the way. Hmm. Part of the problem with having a first timer is they don't know how to use the press. They don't know how to communicate. And I think that really part of what he's done in this runoff is he's really dependent upon Governor Kemp's get out the vote operation to deliver those 200,000 extra voters that, you know, Greg was talking about that Kemp got that that Walker didn't. And make up the difference. So, look, it's obvious from the polling that any one of these guys could win. So the question's not going to be whether or not you're actually happy with their stump speech or anything like that. It's going to be who got you to go to the polls. And that intensity so far looks like it's been advantage Democrats.
Thanks in large part, Jeannie, to Barack Obama. Did that second visit make a difference?
Well, I tell you, if I ever run for office, which I never would, as you know, Joe, but if I did, I want Barack Obama out there. Nobody gets a crowd going like Barack Obama. He had some great one-liners. And it is important because, as Greg and you were talking about, they got to get the base out. You know, a problem that Democrats across the country had in this midterm is that black voters did not come out in as large numbers as expected. And so they are trying to push those numbers up. Nobody is better equipped to do that than Barack Obama. But as Greg was talking about, they've brought in a host of Hollywood celebrities, you know, America Ferrera to the aforementioned Dave Matthews Band, who apparently attracted a lot of the suburban mothers over to the event. So you get them out the way you can. And, you know, there are very good signs numbers wise for Democrats here. You know, you look at the numbers and at least the early voting numbers, Democrats are buoyed by those because we're seeing a lot more people who live in Democratic districts out to vote compared to Republicans. Mm-hmm. But of course, Republicans vote same day in higher numbers. So that could flip, but it's good early signs for Democrats.
You are right that Barack Obama had some great one-liners last night. I mean, it was live at the Improv once again. We saw this during the general, and he had even more material this time around just because the campaign keeps going. My God, we didn't have vampires and werewolves back then. But I guess my question for both of you is, when is it too much? Let me bring you back into the room again last night at the big Obama rally. Here's Raphael Warnock.
You deserve a senator who will tell you the truth. You deserve a senator who actually lives in Georgia.
So we're back to that. We talked about this the other night, the whole homestead thing. Does he actually live here or Texas? Here's Barack Obama again with more of his routine.
Since the last time I was here, apparently he also claimed that he used to let me beat him at basketball. But then he admitted that we've never actually met. So I guess this was more of an imaginary whooping that I laid on him. Now, listen, this would be funny if he weren't running for Senate.
Now, look, I've played a lot of these moments, as you know, on this program as they've happened. It's been part of the Herschel Walker campaign. But, Rick, at what point does it become too much where you're making fun of the candidate and starts to come back on you and make you look bad?
Look, I mean, none of these attacks are actually going to resonate with these independent voters who are looking at the, you know, sort of individual. They've already made some decisions on their authenticity. And now it's really going to be like, who's going to best help me establish my community the way I want it, right? Who's going to be my best representative there? And look, the fault line is most of these people are going to vote their preference, right? Even the independent voters have preferences on the Republican and Democratic side. And all we saw during the general election was this is all about who's a Republican showing up and who's a Democrat showing up. And it's really very little to do with who these individuals are who are running in the contest.
Jeannie, do they come off as sounding elitist? I know people are laughing, but how does it resonate? How does it echo a couple of days later?
Well, we should all remember, we've seen this backfire on Barack Obama. He is great with the one-liners. It backfired in the case of Donald Trump, who ran for president and
won. Who became
president because of it. Yeah, so because of that. But, you know, listen, I think what Barack Obama is talking about is this guy doesn't have the character to be senator, and he's made that case over and over, and the campaign, that's the case they want him to make to get their voters out.
Boy, it's just incredible. It happens finally on Tuesday, the actual voting. We're told we might find out who won by, say, the next day. We'll talk about it more with Rick and Jeannie coming up on the Fastest Hour in Politics. I'm Joe Matthew. This is Bloomberg. 8:30 this morning. Boy, it was something watching, listening to surveillance here on Bloomberg. I mean, their jaws were on the floor. TK, John Farrow, Bramo, and their guests. Nobody could believe this number. So much for the whisper, stronger than expected. The markets freak out, but that's good news on Main Street. And of course, you know, Joe Biden wanted to talk about it. That's part of his job. We don't need to deal with Jay Powell and interest rates and a possible recession right now. By God, there are more jobs than we expected. And the president says wages are up too. Here he is.
Wages for working families, in fact, over the last couple months have gone up, up. These wage increases are larger than the increase in inflation during that same period of time. And so we're in a position now where we're here, things are moving. They're moving in the right direction.
Which sounds great, unless you're Jay Powell or apparently half of Wall Street. That's like cringe material there. Up more than inflation? Well, that could lead to a wage spiral if we're not already in one. And all this stuff sounds really cold and just awful when, you know, people come on the air and say, my God, we have to break the job market to stop inflation. Well, maybe you ought to lose your job first. But then the president leaves the podium, sits down at the mini desk there with Marty Walsh and Brian Deese behind him, and he signs legislation preventing the rail unions from going on strike. No, not you, not now. Even without the sick time. Well, they got one day, I guess, in that thing. And of course, the president, as he said yesterday, he negotiated a deal that nobody else could have, he said. So damned if you do, damned if you don't. As we head into this first weekend of December, with the help of Lincoln Mitchell, was looking forward to talking to Lincoln at this very moment, political analyst, adjunct, associate research scholar at the Institute of War and Peace Studies at Columbia University. I can't tell if this is a good day or a bad day, Lincoln. What do you think?
For Joe Biden, I think it's on balance an okay day. The jobs report is what's going to drive the news for most Americans watching this. And averting the railroad strike is a good thing for Joe Biden. It may not, I think it's not a great deal for the workers, and it may in the long run continue to build a sentiment that Joe, for younger, particularly for younger Democrats, that Biden is a corporate Democrat and is somebody about whom they can't get enthused. But in the short run, it's a good day.
Well, it keeps, you know, I realize it keeps the economy moving. You can really make a very easy argument that he had no choice. He couldn't have the economy shut down going into the end of the year here. That was not an option. But he just didn't plan for it to go this way, right? Lincoln, he's talking all the time about he wants to be the most union, labor-friendly administration in history. He's up in Boston today at the IBEW Local 103, for crying out loud. That's not the story he wanted to tell.
And that's also very much his brand, right? He's middle-class Joe, the labor guy. He's also Joe Biden, who had, before he became, you know, vice president, certainly before he became president, was legendary for actually taking Amtrak, right?
Yeah.
From Washington to his home in Delaware. So this is very much against his image. What strikes me here and what puzzles me is that you could understand a situation where the president said, you know, at the end of the day, the money that the labor unions, I'm a pro-labor guy, but this money is too much, right? You could understand that. Hmm. But on something like paid sick leave,
right,
which seems, for those of us who are fortunate enough to have paid sick leave or to work from home, it just seems so extraordinary that you would say to railroad workers that, you know, if you're sick and you go and you stay home, which we want sick people to do right, in an age when COVID is still out there, you're going to lose a day's work. And for people who need that money, that's a poor decision.
Or you're fired, I guess, in some cases.
Or you're fired.
Is what was happening. Now, so, okay, I'm glad you brought it up. Listen to Joe Biden today in that same address to the nation. As the jobs report came out, he had some initial remarks about the rail deal and specifically on paid sick leave. Listen.
And look, I know this bill doesn't have paid sick leave that these rail workers and frankly every worker in America deserves. But that fight isn't over. I didn't commit we were going to stop just because we couldn't get it in this bill that we were going to stop fighting for it.
We heard a similar refrain from Marty Walsh this morning. We heard similar comments yesterday from Democrats, including Chuck Schumer. Lincoln, are we serious, though? How do you come back around on that?
We also heard it from Democrats like Nancy Pelosi in the House of Representatives, who is still the speaker. So it seems to me, I mean, I'm just an ivory tower academic, right? But it seems to me that if the Secretary of Labor, the President, the Speaker of the House, and the Senate Majority Leader agree on something, we should be able to get it done.
Lame duck?
We don't know if he's a lame duck yet, right?
No, I mean, can this be done in the lame duck? That's the unless there's some sort of executive action he's going to take, right?
It could be done by executive action. It could be done quickly in the lame duck session. Absolutely. And it's the kind of thing where, you know, who's against this? Other than the kind of most Montgomery Burns-ish labor corporate boss, who's really going to stand up and say these sick workers need to come in? That's what they need to do, and that's good for America.
Oh my God! Make you've got Ted Cruz and Bernie Sanders fist bumping over this on the Senate floor, for crying out loud.
Right. Make the Republicans oppose this. Right. Make Joe Manchin stand alone out there and for once put some muscle on him. But this was something he could have done, and not doing it was a decision.
Amazing to me, there isn't more shaming of the railroads in this conversation. If you have both sides of the aisle having this this argument, Lincoln, and agreeing on this when it comes to sick time, how come their names aren't in the headlines? How come these sort of phantom 12 unions? It's amazing to me there hasn't been more of an effort to put them in the public eye.
To put the railroads
I should say, yes.
Right,
when you have 12 unions who are also, you know, not terribly well known, it's the railroad companies that people don't know the first thing about.
Right. And I suspect the reason for that, and again, this is just a wild guess, but I suspect it's because they give a lot of money to politicians. And part of what they're buying is, you know, don't expose us like this.
Boy, that's a pretty grim view if that's the case.
You don't bring me on your show for my optimism. We've established that.
Yeah, we'll try to keep it that way. Lincoln, thank you for chiming in. Lincoln Mitchell, at the Institute of War and Peace Studies at Columbia University. We'll see what the panel thinks about this coming up here, because, you know, it's interesting. As we go into next year, the chances of a recession, we're told, are great. Bloomberg Economics will tell you the chances are 100%. And we've got a job market here that's confounding the Fed and prompting them to raise interest rates continuously until we are into a recession. So it does make you sort of wonder sometimes what side of the coin the messaging needs to be on at the White House, and what they should be preparing the American people for. We'll pick it up with the panel coming up next. Jeannie Shanzano and Rick Davis are with us in our final moments here on the fastest hour in politics at the threshold of the weekend. I'm Joe Matthew in Washington. Glad you came along. We'll check in on the markets and get an update on traffic for you as we all try to get home here. I'm Joe Matthew. This is Bloomberg.
Join us in Chicago or virtually on May 2nd for Bloomberg's Business Value of AI event and networking reception. This event will gather business and technology executives to share their experiences and provide insights into their strategies for deploying AI that achieves a desirable ROI. You'll also learn how companies have successfully implemented AI solutions that have improved productivity and profitability. This program is proudly sponsored by IBM. Register at bloomberglive.com/AI/radio.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Joe Matthew on Bloomberg Radio.
So does Joe Biden make a Hail Mary in the lame duck on paid sick leave? He already promised an assault weapons ban would be reinstated, at least at some point, not necessarily this month. But the window could be closing for this as well. We reassemble the panel here, Jeannie Shanzano and Rick Davis are with us as we pile into the weekend. And Jeannie, I don't know your thoughts on this, but the list just seems to keep getting longer here. And the president, last couple of days, as he signs this workers' bill, prevents the strike. That's a good thing. But he's taken a lot of flack, particularly from the left wing of his party, the progressive wing of his party, when it comes to paid sick leave. That was supposed to be in Build Back Better, right? Are we going to try to get this back again now?
You know, I think he can try to push for it. I doubt it happens. They have so much on their plate already in the lame duck. And, you know, I know he's getting a lot of criticism, but he also should get a lot of positive thoughts. Imagine our conversation today if we were headed towards a railroad strike, and he can take credit for helping to avert that. Yes, they do deserve the paid sick leave. That's clear, and most people agree on that. But Joe Biden had to take the tough action of averting this strike.
Well,
and
is
they
that
did.
Because he called Congress? I mean, Congress would say, no, we did it, actually. He couldn't do it without us, Rick Davis.
Yeah, I mean, he failed in his efforts, you know, with his cabinet members to try and get a deal with the unions and in the railroads. And he had to leave it up to the Congress. He couldn't get it done. And the reality is the unions might have been better off with a negotiated settlement with the unions or with the railroads. So who knows? They only fell 8 votes short in the Senate to get 60 votes that you need for the paid leave. And so You know, it wouldn't surprise me that there's not another attempt to try and fix that, because it really is pretty egregious. And there, and as you said in the last segment, you know, nobody's talking about Norfolk Southern, CSX, Union Pacific, and BNSF, four unions or four railroads that control 85% of all the rail activity in the country. And they're the ones who are saying, no, we're not going to pay you.
Yeah. So what is that, Jeannie? How come Bernie Sanders, and I know he's said more about this than most, and other progressive Democrats aren't up there with the big easels on the Senate floor, the logos of these companies, the phone numbers to leave a message for their CEOs?
Well, you know, we may see some of that. They haven't been doing it enough. We have heard Joe Biden do this in other sectors. We may hear him do this. But the reality is, he is the president of the United States. He needed to make sure he did bring them to the table. They couldn't get it past those four of the 12 unions. So he did have to turn to Congress, but rightly so. And he deserves credit for doing that. And so does his team, because imagine if they didn't turn to Congress, where we would be right now. I think it was a pretty good week for Joe Biden, all said and done.
It's just kind of ironic, I guess, Rick, that he ends up at the IBEW 103 doing a call panel for Raphael Warnock tonight up in Boston, where he's holding another fundraiser later that, you know, most normal people can't get into. But, you know, what was the mood, you wonder, when he walked in that room today after telling more than 100 rail workers they're not allowed to strike?
Yeah, I mean, irony is the partner of politics. I mean, it happens all the time. And this is pretty ironic that he would have just gone through this process and then said, okay, but we need you this time around again.
Right. Yeah.
but look, I mean, the options aren't great, right? I mean, do you really want to have Herschel Walker, you know, represent your union interests? I mean, look, I mean, anytime.
No option in either case. You're right.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting to see how this resolves itself. But look, the good news is, and Jeannie's right, we don't have a rail strike going into the holidays that would affect the economy, our ability to get goods and services delivered, and that's a good thing all around.
Well, it's just about, an hour and a half up the road from the IBEW there in Dorchester, at a place we like to call Manch Vegas, that is in our hearts today as we consider a world of which it is not the first in the nation primary state. That, of course, would be New Hampshire, but we all pile into Manch Vegas to cover it, Manchester, New Hampshire, where the candidates are, the pundits, the press. It's almost a festival that happens there every 4 years. It's one I know both of you have spent a lot of time at. I've been lucky to do a few primaries, and President Biden says that day is over. It's too small, it's too white, and it's not going to be first in line anymore. He's gone to the Democratic National Committee with a new calendar that would put South Carolina up first. And then that would be followed by some. Iowa's nowhere to be seen in this, by the way, and he doesn't even like the idea of a caucus. Rick, you know these states really well. You've run presidential campaigns in them. How does this change? First of all, does that really happen? I mean, New Hampshire has like a state constitution that says no matter when the first primary is, we will go before it. We will always be first. How does he change this?
I'm thinking Christmas in Manchester.
That's it, right?
Yeah, we had New Year's Eve in Manchester in 2008 because kept moving up. Look, I mean, as you say, it's a constitutional right to be first in New Hampshire. Nobody else has that. I have to give my bias to New Hampshire. I love New Hampshire.
They love John McCain.
And they love John McCain, and a lot of other campaigns have survived that I've worked on because of those very well-informed voters of New Hampshire. That being said, this is quite a trick, right? One, normally these kinds of things are vetted out in, you know, the DNC's committees. They have a study, they appoint smart people to analyze it.
Yeah.
And none of that happened here. It was, here's what the president wants, and this is what the president's
because those
get.
Are the states that he won, right? Those are the states that made his campaign real.
Yeah, look, arguably you can think, well, he's running again and he's just going to cook the books, right? He's just going to have a primary that is only the states, you know, that he does well in. And what's interesting is there's very little of that reporting. I mean, the poor New Hampshireites are getting thrown under the bus. This is a power grab by a sitting president to basically dictate the rules of the game to his own party, and like hardly anybody's pushing back. I'm stunned by it, frankly. I can't imagine if this were Trump rearranging the primary schedule for 2020 or even right now, I mean, people would be going crazy.
But they don't have to accept this, right, Jeannie? Is there a world in which they're doing, it's like the rules committee today and tomorrow, and then the full DNC votes on this? What if they just say no?
You know, it's unlikely. It is good to be the head of the party. He is the head of the party. He is taking his revenge clearly on Iowa that killed him in 88, 08, and 20. He doesn't want to do it. And let's not forget, you know, we were out in Iowa in, you know, in what, how many days? It took 24 days for them to count the vote last time around. Yep. You know, they have to admit it was a disaster out there for that caucus.
Why you have to take it out of New Hampshire, for crying out loud?
Well, you know, listen, he wants to get to South Carolina and do some payback. But the reality is, let's not forget, Iowa and New Hampshire are not diverse states. They are not racially, ethnically diverse. They are not economically diverse. And that is the point the president is making to Democrats. Also, let's also forget, Iowa and New Hampshire have pushed the Democratic Party towards the progressive wing. They want to move it back to the center, more to the establishment ground. And I think both parties would be well served by doing that. You know, who knows if Republicans follow suit, but that is an important point they are not making publicly, but should be made privately. And it is a real concern, because you nominate a far left candidate, you lose the general election, and they don't want to lose.
It's a really interesting consideration here. Rick, what if, could we be in a world, by the way, the Republicans already signed off on their calendar. Does that mean we're in a world in which we're going to Manchester twice? There's two different primary days?
Yeah, I don't even know how you reconcile that. And you're right. Republicans are going to go to Manchester. They're probably going to go to Iowa, although I do side with Jeannie on the fact that Iowa is too screwed up.
Maybe just stop the Iowa thing.
But the bottom line is that this could be the first cycle where you have a distinctly different schedule between the Democrats and Republicans.
Who's got money or time for that?
Stuff. Yeah, exactly. It's going to really confuse voters, I think, when they're, you know, they're voting in two different places in the same week, Republicans in one location and Democrats in another.
It's not lost on me, Jeannie, that the president indicated you don't have to worry about this is just for 2024. You can do whatever you want after that. I mean, is this not self-serving?
Yeah, you know, listen, Joe, he might be on the ballot in 24. That's his concern. What happens after that? Well, sure, he'll leave it to the younger generations. And let's not forget, like, interesting move with Georgia and Michigan there as well. You know, some people have been talking about the fact that Michigan, because they don't have party registration, you could have Republicans going and monkeying around with the Democrats there. God. I mean, it could be a big old mess. I'm for it. I love it. But it could be a real, you know, a real interesting season if this happens. And also in New Hampshire, Governor Sununu. It's going to be curious to hear what he does, because he's going to have the Democrats and Republicans in his state behind him fighting for New Hampshire's first in the nation.
Well, that's a great point. He already pushed back on this along with Senator Hassan. I mean, Rick, you know, this is part of local industry, right? This is part of the New Hampshire economy.
Oh, yeah. Senator Shaheen, Senator Hassan, the Democrats have railed against it. They sounded just like Governor Sununu.
Absolutely.
They got their talking points right. And it is a right to life here. I mean, like, this is what New Hampshire is all about. And there are really important aspects of New Hampshire campaigns. I mean, Jeannie talked about some of the you know, problems with it. But, like, it is one of the very few places where voters can actually get to know candidates. They're required to have retail politics. There's not a media market other than Boston that's big enough to make a big impact. And so candidates have to go there, sit in the diners, and talk to voters. We hardly ever see that anymore. Yeah. Just big rallies, and nobody goes to a big rally.
Well, one way or the other, whether it's first or second, the three of us are going to get a booth at the Red Arrow Diner. That's before we go to the Puritan, of course, in Manch Vegas. Won't that be fun? Jeannie Shanzano, Rick Davis, great talk, as always. We're not going to New Hampshire this weekend, though. No, sir, we're going to Georgia with special coverage ahead. Starts on Monday, the runoff between Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker. I'm Joe Matthew. This is Bloomberg.
I'm on my way to Atlanta where the water tastes like cherry wine. I'm on my way to Atlanta where the water tastes like cherry wine. Yes, because the water in this town tastes just like turpentine.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.